This segment of the Bass Kayak and Beers podcast is sponsored in part by Dark Horse Tackle. Go to darkhorsetackle.com and use promo code BKB5 to save an extra $5 when you build your own box. Douglas Outdoors, serious rods for serious anglers. Norsk Lithium. The lithium kayak battery you need is just a click away. Go to norsklithium.com. Catch Outdoors, the official measuring board for all three national trails. Go to catchoutdoors.com and use promo code BKB5 to save 5% on your next online purchase. What is going on, everyone? Welcome once again to The Real Life on the Bass Kayak and Beers podcast. We kind of switch it up. If you follow me on social media, you'll notice that I used to have, well, it was supposed to be Joshua Paris, Brass to Bass, if you follow him on Instagram, to talk about setting goals both in fishing, social media, and hunting. But last minute, he couldn't make it. So it just so happens that Dan Perry and Kurt Smith were going to record today for the Advanced Kayak Angler. And I figured instead of canceling the show, we kind of switch it around. Dan's going to take the night off and me and Kurt are going to fill in and do a show on what was supposed to be Wednesday's show. It's going to be a live show today. So hope you guys enjoy it. Kurt, how you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm doing really good, man. I'm doing really good. Spring is almost here. I can taste it.
Yes. What's the name of the epoxy? The groundhog?
I don't know the name of the groundhog, but he's supposed to, he didn't see a shadow, I guess. So
yes.
So. Spring's supposed to be early. I mean, I just saw, I was out fishing the other day. I got out for a couple hours with a buddy and on some of the trees, you just barely see the buds were just starting to wake up on the trees, man. It's just like, Southwest Ohio, winter is long and gray and cold, and I'm really glad it's coming to an end.
Did you went to the Columbus Expo? Was that even close to you? I know it was a huge expo.
Yeah, it's a big expo. I did not go this year. I usually go every year, but this year I did not make it. We actually, me and my wife were purchasing a car that weekend. So it just, you know, life and fishing and got kind of, life kind of took priority, you know.
It always needs to. Yeah, for sure. For those that are watching on the live show, you know, welcome. You're welcome to comment. Let us know where you're watching and listening from. We're going to have Ewan Miner and Ethan Jett, two hammers from Tennessee. And we're going to be talking about bladed jigs. I refuse to call it a chatterbait because that's a brand. It's actually a bladed jig. I know chatterbait's probably be more recognizable in the title. It'll probably get more people interested in watching, but refuse to call it the brand name. We're going to call it bladed jig for this episode. But, you know, these are guys that are well-known, not just in Tennessee, but nationally on the kayak trails because they're a bunch of hammers. Ewan Miner finally won the Hobie BOS that has eluded him for the last two seasons. He won it last season. Congratulations to your minor. Ethan Jett is another hammer from Tennessee, has won a bunch of local events and also qualified for the, not the classic, the Bassmaster Kayak Series Championship up in, that's going to be in Tenkiller. But starting off with a couple of news. First of all, good news for Texans. 2025. Bassmaster Classic and the Kayak Series Championship are coming back to Fort Worth. As soon as I saw that, I got a bunch of messages on my phone, DMs and all that. I'm like, let me make sure my membership for Bassmaster and Bass Nation Texas is up to date because I have never been more motivated to qualify for a Bassmaster Kayak Championship than this year. For next year, of course.
Yeah, I'd be excited for it. I mean, I'm excited just to hear about all the great things that are happening. But, man, if that was stuff was happening in my home state, I'd be pumped too, man. I'd be really pumped. You're a lucky guy.
it's kind of like the NFL. You know that the they don't pick the northern state now for the Super Bowl because of weather. So I'm assuming for the Bassmaster Classic, because it's usually March, you're never going to see it in Ohio or up northeast where there's a lot of anglers. I know in Ohio, even though it's not known for tournament anglers as far as the basketball world, but there's a rich culture of bass fishermen over there in Smalley. So it's kind of sad. You're not going to get to experience that ever.
Ever.
So you climate change.
There will be no major series having their championship in Ohio. That's never going to happen.
But hey, it's growing by leaps and bounds up in Ohio. Bass fishing culture, it is. I can see more and more people from Ohio. The Columbus Fishing Expo was a huge hit, from what I understand. So,
yeah, that pulls people from Pennsylvania, Michigan. I mean, that's a crazy big show. Crazy big show. And there's a lot of people who fish in Ohio. It's just there's not a lot of people who make the national tournament scene per se, But there's a lot of hidden talent running around.
By the way, speaking of NFL, did you get to watch the Super Bowl?
I did not. No.
You're not a fan of NFL? Taylor Swift, not a Swiftie?
Yeah, not a huge one now. Not a huge Swiftie now.
God, I would have bet you were, but no, I'm kidding. It was a good game. Was the first half sucked. I was like, yeah, I'm not into this game. But the second half, especially overtime, was really, really good. That end of the game where the coach Reed did not pick a timeout, just ran the play that my wife was like, that's an incredible play. And I was telling her, throughout the year, they're going to have one play that's going to be a disguise play that they already at preseason, they're already, if we make it to the Super Bowl, this is the play we're going to run. We're going to practice the heck out of it. And you'll know if we ever need it to win a Super Bowl. So, and that play looked like there was, that kind of like disguise play. And for him not to take a timeout, I was yelling like, dude, I wasn't going for either one of them. I just wanted a great game. But I was like, why is this guy not taking a timeout? But he didn't, and they won. But anyways.
That's good coaching right there.
Yeah. Another thing before we bring our guest in, I was surprised and kind of disappointed. The Hobie BOS at Sam Rayburn. Only 95, 96 anglers, I think somewhere in the mid-90s. I was shocked. Texas pulls easily on a local trail, 100+. National trails, anywhere from 200, which they has happened with the Bassmaster Kayak Series. And Hobie BOS is not less than 150, maybe 125. I don't know if it had anything to do with Super Bowl, and people will roll their eyes like, why would you miss a tournament if you really love fishing? Super Bowl. You have to understand, here in Texas, Super Bowl is kind of like a holiday. It's not just a game. It's a time where you take time off to be with your family, friends, your kids, and you make a day out of it. So it's not as simple as just a game. It's really like a holiday here. So I think in hindsight, they probably next year don't book a trail on Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah, I think that was a tough. I think there's a lot of little factors pulling people away from it, man.
Yeah,
Super Bowl being a big one, Valentine's Day, the economy a little bit too. I mean, the economy's not great. Not everyone's feeling like they have extra cash to spend on, to spend that extra $300 for entry fees and whatnot. I mean, I think there's just a lot of little reasons. I'm just glad to see Bass come back and have a great showing for Murray. Yep. They're going to have a great showing for Murray. There's always one or two tournaments a year on the national scene that just for whatever reasons don't quite make the numbers. And let's just hope that that's the last one.
Yeah, that was a surprise. I would expect that somewhere in the Midwest, up north, but not in Texas.
Not in Texas.
It is what it is. Yeah. I think the fact that they're having two tournaments in Texas also did not help, because they have William Patman and then they had Sam Rayburn. So I think I didn't go, but it wasn't because of the Super Bowl or because there was another trail in Texas. It's because I had something more important on that weekend that I had planned a long time ago. So that took priority, kind of what you said, family takes priority. I would have loved to go to Sam Rayburn, but I think the fact that they put two trails in Texas, there may be more of the people from my neck of the wood, North Metro Texas anglers are saying, well, I don't want to drive to Sam Rayburn because it's maybe the same state, but God knows it's a 6-hour drive to get there, maybe more. So I'm sure they kind of, I'm sure there's two or three people that said, hey, you know what? I'm not going to do, if there wasn't Will, Pat Mann Lake wasn't there, they probably would have done the drive to Sam Rayburn, especially those that are not interested in AOI, just the one-off tournaments. But anyways, we'll see what happens.
And it was close to Harris Chain too, right? It was within 2 weeks of Harris Chain. So, I mean, like for someone like me who either one of those is a 14-hour drive, I had to pick one or the other. I did not have the funds to do both of them, so I picked Harris Chain. I think that took away from it too. I think a lot of people – actually, I know there were at least several people in the same position I was. They had to pick between one or the other, and they picked Harris Chain. So, I mean, all these things, you know, there's three people, there's four people, you know, there's 10 people, and then all of a sudden you're down 50, 60 people, and then – you know, and then you throw in Valentine's Day and the Super Bowl and boom, man, he just, you know.
What's interesting, though, and I don't want to go too long about this because I you know, I want to be respectful to Ethan and you and taking the time to join us. But real quickly, it's going to be interesting what, you know, how many anglers we get for that William Patman Lake, because that one is non-motors. So if you get like a significant larger crowd, especially since William Patman is not a known lake, like Sam Rayburn is going to catch like out of towners, you know, people not from Texas know Sam Rayburn, but even Texans don't even know William Patman. So if that ends up drawing a significant more number, then that may, Hobie may be thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe it wasn't the non-mortar thing after all. We'll see. Yeah, we're not going to dive into it, but we'll see. Let's bring in Ethan Jett, first of all. Ethan, congratulations, man, on all your success last year. I know you qualified for 10-killer kayak, Bassmaster Kayak Championship Series, so congratulations, buddy.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here. So,
tell us a little bit about yourself, Ethan, for those that don't know you or haven't followed you either on the trails or social media.
Well, I live in Tennessee, Middle Tennessee. I'm 25. I fish mainly Hobie Bass Open Series, Bassmaster, and the Tennessee Bass Nation. I'm actually the 2023 Tennessee Bass Nation champion. That was down there on Lake Gunnersville. And a chatterbait bladed jig was a big
factor. You guys can call them chatterbaits if you want.
I will. That's what I call them.
But, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But I run a small little YouTube channel. I've been growing it, Jets Fishing Adventures, and I've just been trying to live one fish at a time.
I like that motto. I like it. What do you think?
The way to live.
I was about to mention, first of all, winning the championship in Tennessee, especially the Bass Nation, that's, to me, considering the loaded talent you guys have in Tennessee, that's like winning a classic or a TOC as far as the talent level.
Yes,
it's not your typical grassroots, and no offense to grassroots tournaments, but I'm just saying grassroots tournaments in Tennessee are a different animal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you may actually have to compete with the 2023 Hobie BOS TOC Angler of the Year. You never know.
Well, Ewing fishes them too. So.
Exactly. My point. To that, let's segue right into bringing you and Minor Ewing. Congratulations, man. Finally, AOI Hobie BOS 2023. How does it feel?
No, it feels great. That was, you know, it kind of felt like it slipped out of my fingers 2 years in a row, but that just makes you want it a little bit more. And it drove me a little harder last year to just make sure that I get as many good finishes as I could. And it's, probably won't be as motivated this year.
I was about to ask that.
I'm out there fishing, but I mean, I had a great start to the year at Harris Chain, so we'll see how it goes.
I know, like, you struggled. I mean, you didn't struggle. Well, you kind of struggled in the first, I think, chance you had to win the TOC about 2 years ago or 3 years ago when Jordan Marshall won it. Then the next year you did a little bit better, and this year you knocked it out of the ballpark as far as the AOI goes. Like, you put a lockdown on it early in the season. Does it feel like a monkey's out of your back, and do you feel like kind of what I was going to ask you about. It was, do you feel hungry to do it again, or do you feel like complacent that or not as pressured or more relaxed now this season compared to others?
I feel more relaxed, and I mean, that could be good for me and it could be bad for me. I don't really know yet. We'll see how the season plays out, but you know, now it's, I've qualified for the TOC this year. I've already won that AOI. So it's just, I guess I can go out and try to win every single tournament and not worry about trying to fish for points or anything. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it gives you more liberty to actually try something different. No one thing, like if you already won the AOI, so you have nothing to prove by winning another AOI. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it allows you room to grow. It says like, you know, I never will try this situation because I wasn't comfortable with it because the AOI or the TOC qualification is on the line. But now you already qualified for next year. You already won the AOI. You don't have nothing to prove. Now I think you can be like, there may be a scenario this season that last season you were like, nah, I'm hesitant because I don't want to screw up my chances. This year you might just say, you know what? I've always wanted to do this. I'm going to try this bait or in this situation. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, more or less, I'm always going to go to what I think my best chance at doing well is. But sometimes, you know, I'll make different decisions throughout the day to maybe abandon something a little bit earlier if I'm not on, say, like what I think would be the winning fish. Whereas, you know, in previous years, I might want to stick to it and fill out my limit. But, you know, I already kind of experienced that this year when Harris Chain on day two, I left my first ramp at 8 a.m. But that was just kind of, I kind of forced myself to do that. But
you changed ramps at 8 a.m.?
Yes.
Well, oh, my goodness. That's awfully early to be changing ramps, yeah, man.
Well, that is, yeah, that's gutsy.
Yeah, it was just one little small patch of grass that would either have them or not, and it didn't have them. So I got out of there quick.
Obviously, it was the right move.
Yeah. But, yeah, just decisions like that, I feel like will be a little easier to make without the AOI on the line that I've got it off my back now. So,
well, my congratulations to both of you. You guys have done amazing throughout your careers, and we wish you the best going into this year. Of course, if you're not in the same tournament, then. No, but congratulations, seriously. So what we're going to be talking about is bladed jigs, shadow baits, whatever you want to call it. You know, Ian and Ethan were talking about what's their favorite ones, colors, you know, brand. Then we'll talk about when is the best scenario or what scenarios do they use it. How do they work at what scenarios they wouldn't even consider throwing one? And lastly, we'll talk about setups. Throughout those questions, for those that are watching on the live show, if you feel free to ask questions, we'll do our best to get this hammers to answer it. First of all, Jacob Jenkins, we need to go fishing this week. I'm assuming you're asking me. Definitely, maybe Monday, Jacob. And Frankie, I always call him Provolone. Good evening, gents, from Slay Nation, president of Slay Nation. Kurt, you want to start off with the first question? You want to ask him the first question, or what do you want to do?
You go ahead. You ask him the first question.
So let's start with you, Ethan. What is, you know, as far as brand goes, you know, what's your favorite brand and why is it? And do you use alternate between one brand or another in specific situations?
Well, if you'd asked me that question 1 year ago, it would have been the Jackhammer, the Z-Man Jackhammer. But after the new Evo came out, that is my favorite now. The new Evo, it has the same action as a Jackhammer, and it's half the price, $10. You don't have to worry about losing a $15, $16 bait. And I like the Clearwater Shad. That's my favorite color. That's one with a Torrin Outdoor Thresher 4.2. That's my favorite. All, if I can catch them on that, I'm happy.
Do you use any other than the Evo?
Like last year down at Harris Chain, I couldn't get a bite on a Jackhammer. and the only thing I could get a bite on was a thunder cricket.
Yep.
Strike King. And I think I know why. The jackhammer is so loud, and that thunder cricket has just a little bit different vibration. And I've caught a lot of fish around Tennessee on the thunder cricket because every boat, every kayak's throwing a jackhammer nowadays.
Yeah.
And that just that little bit of difference, I think it's a key.
I'm going to second that. I had the experience of fishing Dardanelle 2 seasons ago, and I pre-fishing was a jackhammer. I couldn't get a bite on the jackhammer on day one. And I had just bought the slobber knockers that came out. And yeah. I'm not sponsored by any brand. I'm not specific to any brand. I've always the mentality that I like to try different brands. There is a problem I see sometimes where we become too much of a fan that it becomes a cult following. And we kind of screw ourselves from maybe using another bait because we're so dedicated to this brand. Which in a way it's great, but in a way, you know, you have to branch out. So what I learned that day is I had like similar, same size, 1/4 ounce, both of them, the jackhammer and the a slobber knocker. Pretty much same pattern. Of course, they do little nuances with the color, but, you know, kind of like green chartreuse shad. Same trailers, for whatever reason, same spot, slobber knocker was just killing it. And it's like people, you don't notice, if you're not all that familiar with bass fish, if you're new to it, you may not notice a difference. But there is a significant difference between the vibration on a jackhammer than a vibration of a slobber knocker. And again, thunder cricket could be another one. I'm just saying names because that was the scenario that I encountered. But I think when you know, everybody and their mother throwing a jackhammer, which means so popular for the last few years. You have a tournament where there's boat tournaments plus kayak tournaments, free fishing. They've seen that jackhammer 20 times in a day. A little nuance as a different vibration, sound, and feel on their lateral lines can make a big difference, I think. I'm not an expert.
You're exactly true. I've caught plenty of fish right behind people fishing a thunder cricket when they're fishing jackhammers. And it's just that little bit of difference. And I have a couple of slobber knockers too, and I like them too. They're more of a finessier, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's a high pitch sound.
Yeah.
More of a high pitch. Yeah. What about you, Ewing?
I don't know if I've even caught a fish on a bladed jig that's not a chatterbait. I've only had success with the Z-Man. I haven't really spent much time with the slobber knocker or the thunder cricket. I mainly almost always throw a jackhammer if I'm throwing a chatterbait, of course. Sometimes I'll throw I think it's a cross-eye chatterbait Z-Man makes.
Yeah.
I'll either snip off the weed guard, or sometimes since it's metal, you can just bend it back and forth and take it off that way. But that one, it's kind of how Ethan was talking about, the just a little bit softer of a knock. But I started throwing that one because it was, what is it, Champlain? Yeah, when the BOS went up there. And there's anytime you go up north, there's a bunch of pike, and I didn't want to be snapping. at that point in time, jackhammers were like $18 or something.
Damn.
But yeah, I wasn't going to throw that around pike. So at that point, there wasn't the Evo, which I have not tried yet. I just haven't been throwing a chatterbait much lately. But I threw it, and I started to really like it. It's got a little bit lighter wire hook, which can be really good for when they're eating it funny or something. If there's a finicky bite, that lighter wire tends to catch them a bit better. But I've had a lot of success with that one. I kind of fell in love with it at that tournament. It's all the components are high quality, which is what I look for in any bait. But as far as other ones, I haven't tried them much. Just stuck to the Z-Man. It's, you know, back when I first got into high school, like throwing the original chatterbaits that were $5 at Walmart. I used to crush fish on those, but Well, it's just kind of, as I've grown up, they've been making improvements and getting more expensive. And yeah, now everyone throws it. It seemed like it used to be you could throw a chatterbait down any bank on the lake, and if you fish for 5 minutes, you'll get a bite on it. But now I'm a lot more specific for what I look for.
What about you, Kurt?
What? Man, I'll be honest. I suck at throwing bladed jigs. So
really,
I'm looking to learn something here with talking with these guys. It's not that I haven't caught fish on it, but you have to have confidence in these baits that we throw, especially during a tournament. So, man, when I roll into a tournament, man, I'm not reaching for a bladed jig or a jackhammer or any of them, you know, Picasso's ones. I'm not reaching for any of them because I just don't have the confidence in it, you know. And I think a lot of it has to do with exactly what you guys are saying is I was kind of late to the bladed jig game. And by the time I got into it, everybody was throwing them.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody's throwing them. So, and if you know me, I'm not the type of guy to go with the flow, right? If everybody's doing something, I'm usually thinking, well, what else can I do? I want to fish differently, you know? So I'm a little late to the game. I'm still like playing catch up. That's actually one of the baits that I'm going to work on this year and try to like get some confidence. So when I get to the right time of year or the right lake, that I will feel confident enough to reach over and grab it and throw it during a tournament.
Confidence is just a tricky thing because you can, you know, I remember what sold me into a jackhammer was fishing the Brazos River, and I didn't start with a jackhammer. I started with something else. I wasn't, you know, I only had like a couple of them. They were $15. I didn't want to get them lost and anything. Yeah. And I finally was like, you know what? I'll tie one this. What the heck? I bought him for a reason. And it's a and I was thinking in my mind, it's like it's a shallow river, so it gets snagged. I can get it. That was the reason why I was doing it. And seriously, it was like my eyes opened to a whole new world. I was like, I was catching 18, 20-inch bass. Like, I caught like five in a span of like 30 minutes, which I know for Ethan and Ewing, this like, I can do that in my sleep, right? But for me, I was like, you know, that was like, oh, wow. And that built confidence. Now, if I would have tried that same bait on the worst condition possible for that bait, I probably wouldn't have skunk and wouldn't have had any confidence in him.
Yeah.
So confidence is kind of tricky.
Yeah. Confidence is everything in fishing. Yeah. I've always said that to everybody I teach. Confidence is number one.
By the way, Ewan, I didn't get to hear what is the trailers that you use for your jackhammers? Do you have a long list of trailers, like twin tails? Do you use them to imitate one thing or another?
I have three different trailers that I use. One of them is just a 3.8 Kitek. I like to use that when I'm really slow rolling it, creeping it along the bottom, and, you know, just something that'll still move when my bait's not moving fast. That's the one I used last year at Harris Chain when I won. And then another is, I don't even know what it's called. It's a Zaco knockoff, but it's made by Bass Pro. It's,
oh yeah,
Bass Pro, most of their plastics are, I mean, all of their plastics are too stiff, but
yeah,
for that trailer, since it's the bait imparting the action on your plastic, I feel like that's, it just has a little bit more kick than a Zaco, and you can, and you buy one pack of trailers and it'll last you for months. I use that one a lot more when I'm fishing it faster with usually a 1/2 ounce. Sometimes I'll fish it with the 3/8. Then another one's the Reaction Innovations Little Dipper. I like throwing that on a 3/8 ounce when I'm fishing it, you know, up super shallow, and it makes it dart around a lot more than, you know, your bigger, bulkier trailers that'll keep it true. And that's kind of all I use. Sometimes I've tried with like putting a crawl or something to give it more of a bluegill profile on your green chatterbaits, but I found that just keeping to that shad profile tends to work better for me.
Ethan, what about you? Do you, I know for like one thing that I discovered, And I discovered this by accident. I was throwing a jackhammer and I wasn't getting a bite. And I threw the one out there and the wind kind of moved me. So I stopped reeling, by default, then the jack, the bladed jackhammer, whatever, fell to the bottom. And I'm just pausing, resetting myself. And then I snapped the rod. So I start reeling in and I got a bite. And that kind of opened the eyes to me that it's like, wait a minute, I don't always have to imitate a bait fish.
Yeah.
If I put like a little, a twin tail, like the, I think it's a Rage Menace.
Yeah.
And work it as I would work a normal jig, I find that sometimes it's a lot more successful than running it as a chat. Do you do that the same? Have you ever thrown it in a way to imitate something other than a chat, like maybe a craw?
I do. And I got an example right here. I'll actually put it's called a torrent timber craw on the back of it. And it just runs a little. Move
to the other side. There you go.
Yeah. It's just like a little craw imitator. And I'll fish this around wood. I don't know if anybody's ever, you'll get so frustrated fishing a chatterbait around laydowns because when it goes over the limb, it'll actually fold over and hang up.
Yeah.
Well, if you use a crawl style with a flat bottom, it'll actually keep it over it.
Mm.
So you can just sit there and yo-yo it over these limbs and everything. And I've caught a lot of fish letting it just fall down. You'll see the line jump. You just reel in and set the hook, and they're on it.
What about you, Ewan? Do you ever use it as a craw imitation?
No, I've tried. It's not me.
I mean, whatever you're doing is working. So, hey, if that's what's working, using it just as a shot, then
I got a question for you, Ewing. So when you say you only use it as a shad imitation, are you specifically seeing shad and being like, okay, I need to match the color to the shad? Or are you just throwing your patented colors that you always throw?
I'm throwing the patented colors I always throw. I used to fish spot remover a lot in cleaner water, but now as fish have gotten more educated, I try to throw other things in the clearer water. So mainly I'll throw just the regular white. There's a dirty white, which is just a white with a gold blade, and then golden shiner, which if you ever go to Florida, if your chatterbait doesn't have a gold blade on it, then it's wrong. Like, I don't know what it
is. Yeah, that's some juice right there.
It's kind of like people, throwing a gold trap in Florida is compared to almost everywhere else in the spring, you throw a red trap, but it's, I don't know if it's actually where the fish eat golden shiners or if it's just with that tannic water that the kind of how the water is not always super dirty, but it's darker, and
it's same way if
you throw like a June bug worm in it in Florida. It's just one of those staples down in Florida.
Yeah, I think even here in Texas in winter, I don't know why kind of golden shiner pattern on a chatterbait or bladed jig, it seems to work a little bit better. I don't know, mainly in the winter. One of the things that I do think about using it as a craw imitation, if you ever seen footage on YouTube, wherever, of a crawfish trying to get away, they'll snap their tails and kind of torpedo for, I don't know, maybe the length of like 3 feet or 5 feet. But that snapping, I've heard from other people that love throwing, like especially the jackhammer, is when you work your chatterbait as a jig, you let it drop, and all of a sudden you snap on the rod in it. It actually creates a similar clicking sound than a crawfish would make, and that is an even a bigger reason why the bass kind of trigger to bite it.
Mm-hmm.
So never thought about that.
I've caught an on bed doing that.
Well, if you ever win a tournament, you win on what I said, just give me credit. You don't need any help, buddy. What would you say, Nathan? I'm sorry, interrupt.
I've actually caught an on bed doing that. I'll throw past the bed and just yo-yo and hit back and let it glide into the bed. And then a lot of times they'll hit it on the fall, yep. Right when it gets in the bed, they'll hit it. It's just like a regular jig, like a swim jig. It just has a blade.
Yeah. Kurt, before we move on to the next question, anything you wanted to add or follow up on?
No, man, I'm learning right now. So I'm like taking notes.
Just enjoying the ride.
I'm mentally taking notes right now.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about when is the best time and worst time to throw it. Let's start with you, Ewan. When do you think, what do you see when you say like, okay, this is going to be a bladed jig kind of bite? You know, when is the ideal time or the best time to use it?
So there's really, at this point, I've refined it to three different times that I'll throw a chatterbait. And that's the number one is anytime you're around offshore grass, whether that be hydrilla, eelgrass, anything you have in your lake, that's what it's designed to do, ripping it through that grass, and it excels doing that. That's if I'm going to a lake that has grass in it, I'm going to have a chatterbait tied on. It's just, it's one of your staples with grass fishing. Another time that I really like to throw it is in a shad spawn. That's when I'll get a 3/8 white chatterbait and I'll put that little dipper on it and shorten it up a lot because I'll shorten up the skirt to, you know, right at the bend of the hook and have that smaller trailer on it because shad spawn fish, they love to short strike a bait. Then other than that, just in current, I'll throw it a bunch, you know, rivers with smallmouth or largemouth, anywhere that you have some substantial current, throwing it in those current breaks. But aside from that, I don't really, wouldn't say there's a worse time like a bad time to throw a chatterbait because you can always catch them somewhere on it. Really, like the only place that I haven't seen it do well is like your true northern smallmouth in that super clear water. But I'm sure someone's probably done it at some point in time. It's just, you know, you can go down to your mini max to appeal to different fish, but those three categories are mainly where I try to keep it with my chatterbait fishing.
Like on St. Clair, you don't hear guys throwing chatterbaits on St. Clair. I've never heard of anybody throwing chatterbaits on St. Clair.
That's interesting.
Smallmouth water, northern.
I fish with Andrew Full from the Serious Angler podcast. I hired him as a guide in the Niagara River, and the water was super clear. Mm-hmm. And we were catching him on chatterbaits. Like, it was super clear. So I guess it depends. But it also was in current. Like, it was as heavy as current as I mm-hmm. can think of. Which brings me to two questions, follow up on what you said. First of all, the grass. I remember Derek Brundle talking about this on the KBF National Trail about four or five years ago, that he likes to he looks for the bladed jig to get a little bit caught up, not immersed in grass, but just a little bit where he like tweaks the rod tip a little bit, it snaps off. And he says, you know, if there's a bass around and you can get that little, you can get that bladed jig to kind of get a little bit caught up just enough where you can just snap out of it real quick. This says they can't resist it. Do you agree with that? Do you try to do that when you're fishing it in grass?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll even get it to the point that you're ripping on it harder than you're setting the hook. Cause if you keep yanking on it, it's going to come out of the grass unless it's, you know, actually caught up on the hook. If it's on that blade, it'll cut through it and free itself up. I don't know about the other baits, but the jackhammer and the cross-eye do it really well. But like when I won on Harris Chain with every single fish was on a chatterbait, it was super thick hydrilla and milfoil, and I would rip it out and I'd actually let it just give it slack and let it fall back down, but they'd either eat it on the fall or when I go to try to snap it back out of that grass. And it's the same way as with the trap. Like sometimes if you can't get your bait back in clean, that's when you're like, I don't even know how I'm going to catch a fish. There's grass on my bait the whole time. That's when you catch most of your fish on it because you're constantly ripping it and trying to free it, and it's not just going in a straight line. And if anyone's around me when I'm fishing, say like in a shad spawn or in current, it can be completely slick bottom. My bait's not even near a blade of grass. It doesn't even have to be a blade of grass in the body of water, but I'll still pop it and rip it like I'm pulling it out of grass, and it'll, you know, make it dart a little bit instead of just tracking in that straight line.
That's good advice. And the other question that I wanted to make is, you mentioned that you use it on current. Do you look to have that bait go with the current or against the current? And again, I'm not big on river fishing, but I've heard people say, you know, you want it to look like there's a fish coming downstream because it looks more natural than a fish coming upstream. Is that 10 out of 10 times
I'm bringing it with the current.
Bringing it with the current. All right.
The only time that I might not be bringing it with the current is, you know, if I'm practicing for a tournament or something and I'm just burning through some water, I'll bring it across. But like on the Susquehanna, I'll float the river and I'll go down below what I want to fish and fish back up rather than fishing it and bringing my bait against the current. Cause it's just, you get, I'd argue to say 4 to 5 times as many bites if you're bringing your with the current, regardless of what it is, chatterbait, spinnerbait, even a Ned rig, like all of those baits, you want it to, that's the way that they're used to feeding. They face up current. If you bring it from behind the fish, you know, and it's not going to be moving as fast if it's coming from behind them going up current. When it comes down in that water, it's, they have that split second to choose. I eat it or it's gone.
That's a good point. What about you, Ethan? What is your favorite time to throw a jackhammer?
I throw it all the time, to be honest. I change my colors up a lot during the time period, like during the winter and all that. The red crawl.
Yeah.
That's what I'll throw on. I fish a lot of Guntersville, Tennessee River. So like what Ewan was telling and what you asked, ripping it through that grass, that's, you catch them crazy this time of year, or a little later, like early March, late February, whenever that grass is starting to come up just a little bit, you can catch some big ones ripping it out of the grass with that crawl color or black and blue.
So Ethan, so it sounds like you guys are fishing it a lot like you do a trap.
Yeah, exactly. That to me, I don't fish a trout. I hate fishing one.
Ooh, I love
a trout. And that is my trap.
That's your trap. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know I'm probably going to make a lot of people mad on that one, but I hate a rattle trap.
It is the hookup ratio on arrow traps. I don't know, man. For me, maybe I was using the wrong setup. I don't throw them that much, but it's like, I don't know. Most of the time, they just come off. I'm probably doing something wrong.
Yeah. Well, anything with treble hooks, you're going to have a 60 to 40% hookup ratio, and you'll lose a lot of fish.
Treble hook versus single hook, you know.
Yeah. Now, I know we'll get to that later, but having the right rod for that big old hook, it does make a big difference.
It really does. Before we go into that, I wanted to ask you about the colors, because I've learned throughout time, and then you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, both you and Ewing. The reason why red is so efficient on winter, I learned that I've heard about it, but I got to experience it on Toledo Bend 2 seasons ago, where I started throwing red and it was working. I think it has to do a lot with the crawfish that are coming out. Like the red is, you like the males, it has this red, bright red to attract the females. Yeah. So red is naturally going to be more conductive to getting bites in winter. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. I think there's a whole scientific behind it. I think the color or the temperature of the water affects the color of the crawfish a lot too. Yeah. So that's why, and when it's cold, everybody uses the red crawl, and then you can move over to like just your regular green pumpkin whenever the summer months and the bluegill spawn, stuff like that.
And do you ever throw a green, kind of like when you're imitating crawfish, do you ever throw green? When is the season to throw green? Like I always hear like black and blue, red and green. So I know red in winter, summer, black and blue. When is like the green wood? There's a specific time where you would use it like a green pumpkin color.
I use a lot more green pumpkin during the bluegill spawn, the mayfly hatch. Anytime when them bluegill are really active, because the bass are up shallow eating the bluegill when they're spawning. So that's when I throw the bluegill colors a lot more in that, like that June, May, late March, any time like that, I'll throw that in the bluegill colors a lot more.
So like the rule of thumb would be winter, early spring, red colors.
Yeah.
Green, May, June. And then when would you throw a black and blue one?
I'll throw a black and blue one all year too. It depends on water clarity.
Yeah, that too.
Just contrasting.
So when you get muddy water, that's when you immediately start thinking black and blue.
There's not like or
a time of year for that.
A lot of time, summertime, everybody's fishing at night, black and blue.
Black and blue at night.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Speaking of water clarity, that's a question that I hadn't thought about, but I'll ask you this question now. Is there a time where you either switch to a different brand because it is less noisy or more noisy because of the water color, or you switch to a bigger bladed jig to a bigger blade to attract more attention?
I will. Like the new Evos, they have a lot of painted blades, and so I'll use it in a little bit clearer water because it's not as flashy. And
do you ever switch to another brand because it might be more noisy or less noisy? Well, we kind of talk about it, but we're specifically talking about muddy water where the visibility is low. Do you ever switch to a certain brand knowing that it's more noisy?
Not really. I'll start off with like a jackhammer or the Evo, and I'll let the fish tell me what they want. If I don't get any bites, I'll switch to a little bit more finessier, like the Thunder Cricket or the Slobber Knocker. That's usually how I'll go.
What about you, Ewing? I know you use more specifically jackhammers, but did you ever switch to like the big bladed chatterbaits that Seaman have if the water clarity is not good?
I mean, I've tried it before, but for me, it's if they're not biting a jackhammer, they're not biting a chatterbait good enough for me to worry about it too much. I'll try to find something else that they'll bite. And then back to what you were saying about times you would use like a green pumpkin. The only time that, I mean, occasionally like I'll change it up, but when I go, a lot of your northern largemouth fisheries, they don't have gizzard shad like we do in probably 90% of the U.S. A lot of those lakes out there don't have them, and their primary forage is bluegills. So like when we go up to Saginaw Bay for the BOS, that will be, if I'm throwing a chatterbait, it's going to be a green pumpkin one. And a lot of people will probably notice that. I don't know if anyone will watch this, but that's if you're throwing something white on.
Thanks for the vote of confidence there.
It's not a place to throw something white. It's a lot of your bluegill colors are up north. I've really experienced it there, but they're extremely effective.
And just so you know, nobody watches this, even nobody. Just my mom, my sisters, probably Kurt's. Kurt, by the way, there's a little knocking sound on your microphone. I turned your mute. I muted you for a second there. I don't know if you can.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better now. Before we move on into rod, reels, and line, Kurt, do you have any questions on the follow-up questions on the subjects we were just talking about? Like,
no, man. I think these guys nailed it. You know, yeah. I got the colors for the timing of the years, when and where they throw them. I'm curious to hear about the exact setups. Like,
yeah,
which rods, you know, do you guys change it when you change weights? You know, you go from 3/8 to 1/2 ounce. Are you upping the weight of your rod as well? What kind of lines, you know, those are the things that I'm super interested in, man, because that's I actually, when I think about throwing a lure, I'm like the reverse. A lot of people go lure, line, rod. I'm thinking rod, line, lure. And to me, that's like the importance for me in how I mentally think about things and how I'm translating the bite and the feel, the baits and all that. So, look, Ethan, you want to start out?
Yeah.
Tell us,
Shout out to Jim for watching, by the way. Jim, thank you for commenting. Appreciate you, buddy. Go ahead.
So I have three rods that I like throwing different types of chatterbaits on. My main go-to rod is a 7'5" medium heavy, and it's got a real light tip on it, but it's got some backbone where you can really get a good hook set with that bigger hook. A lot of people don't realize, and it shows in from people going from a boat to a kayak, and this is my number one tip I've ever give anybody.
Yep.
Everything, you're giving so much to that fish. You got the line stretch, the rod bending, and you got the kayak moving. So having that kind of extra backbone in a rod is really good. I use, it's an iRod 7'5" Snyder Snipe. And Russ Snyder actually designed it.
Yep.
And I love that rod. You can rip it through grass. You have enough give to it where if one hits it right at the boat, they still have time to eat it before you hit them with the hook set. And then that's for my all-around medium grass. If I'm fishing real heavy grass, I'll use a 7'2" medium heavy plus. It's an ALX toad face. It's got it's actually designed to fish a toad. And it's got a little light tip where you can skip it up under docks, but it's got a real heavy backbone where you can actually set the hook with a frog. But I'll use it around real heavy grass, ripping it out of the grass. Yeah. And that way I'm not, you're giving the fish so much anyway.
Yeah.
So you're not, if you sit there with a medium heavy with a kind of a lighter tip, your arm's going to be killing you by the end of the day sitting there doing this. So with that little bit heavier rod, I'll use it. And then my third option is for my little finessier, like the Mini Max. I use a 7'2" cash and jig and worm rod. It's got a real light tip, and it's just kind of a medium. It's a medium heavy, but it's more on the medium side.
What about reels? Like, I've heard people, different sides, was like, too fast is not good, too slow is not too good. What about the reel speed?
So I've caught most of my chatterbait fish slow rolling it. Like, you'll start fishing one, and you're just sitting there with a 7-1, 8-2, and you're just reeling it too quick. So I have a 7-1 on all my reels. I'm actually changing them over to a 6-4.
Wow.
I can't slow down. I don't know why. It's harder for me to slow down than it is for me to fasten up. So I want to slow down my reels to be able to fish a chatterbait better and catch more fish.
When you say you're going to, lower the speed on your reels, I'm assuming that's just for your chatterbait setups.
Yeah, just for my chatterbait, And that's just a personal preference.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think a lot of times I don't like to do any more than 7.04. Like, I don't like to use an 8-speed. I think I reel in too fast. And one of the things that I've noticed with myself, especially if I go through, a period where I'm not catching anything, then I get a big bite. This doesn't apply just to blade jigs. It applies to pretty much everything when I'm throwing. If I haven't had a bite for a while and I get a bite and I get that adrenaline rush, as soon as I take, pictures, measurements, whatever, put it back in the water, by the third cast, I'm noticing that I need to tone down my adrenaline because now I'm not getting any bites again because, it's a product of like I start off fast and I'm full of energy. I start off fast. It's line outs. I'm excited. Then it gets to a point of the day where I'm tired. So without noticing, I'm slowing down. Yeah. That's when I get a bite, and then I get this rush of adrenaline, and then all of a sudden I'm reeling it up real fast again, and I have to stop myself and it's like remind myself, talk to myself. It's like, wait a minute, what speed were you? What was the cadence when you were caught that fish? Because you tend to get full of adrenaline and then kind of start rushing again after you caught a bite without realizing. You caught it because you were slowing down, maybe because you were tired, or maybe because you do it purposely. But I think it works subconsciously, and I find myself where it's like, need to slow down, talk to myself, slow down, Armando, slow down, slow down. You got it because you were slowing down. Don't speed up again.
And you hit the nail right on the head. That's the reason why I'm going to 6.4, is that I can hurry up if I need to. But that slowing down when you're in a tournament setting and that clock is going, it's just subconsciously you got to hurry up. And having that slower reel, you can fasten up if you need to, but you can also go slower whenever the whenever you're actually catching fish.
That's and I think I've talked to people, friends of mine, they're not maybe that into bass fishing competitively, but they're like, well, why would I get different speeds? Why can't you just, you know, reel fast or reel slower? It is like, and I try to explain them, when you are 8 hours fishing, you sometimes kind of get zoned out. You start thinking, and you, each one of us reverts to their comfort in cadence, right? And as much as I say, okay, well, if I have an 8 speed, I need to slow it down, then that is taking focus away from what I'm doing, because now I have to constantly think about, hey, I need to slow down, versus where if I go to a slower one, it could work vice versa for other people. But if I was like, okay, forget a reel that's slower, like you just mentioned, I can just go in my normal cadence, and that will work without me having to put extra energy mentally into like, hey, I have to do this, I have to do this, because it doesn't come naturally.
Exactly.
And what about the line? What type of lines do you so, I mean, well, you can talk about brand too if you want. But what type of line, you know, do you use leader, braid, floral, mono? And
so I'll start at my little small mini max. I use 15-pound Seaguar in Vizx or Katsu, depending on what I have at the time.
Expensive.
Yeah, but it is good line.
Yeah.
I like it. And if you, I fish around docks a lot, and it has that coating on it, and it does not get, it's almost better than a Brazex, really, about getting nicks. You can wrap or fish around one of those pilings, and you won't get any nicks on it.
Really?
It's nice, but it is expensive. I'm not going to lie. If you're looking for a really good line for chatterbaits and not breaking the bank, you can't go wrong with a Basex. $10 for 200 yards. So if that's what you're looking for, if not, if you don't want to break the bank, go with Basex. It's really good. My regulars, anytime I'm just fishing a regular chatterbait, not around heavy grass, I'm fishing 15 to 17 pound Seaguar, Tatsu, or Invisex. And then if I'm fishing real heavy grass, I actually have 30-pound Smackdown braid with a 20-pound Invisx leader.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to you, Ewan. Let's talk about, first of all, rods. What kind of rods do you use for chatterbaits?
So I like something in the 7'1" to 7'4" range, medium heavy with a little bit more tip, like he was talking about, but a good backbone to it. So I ordered two of the, because I'm still trying to find a Shimano G Loomis rod that I feel is perfect for it. The 7'2" medium heavy Corrado rod is what I've been using all year. It's gotten the job done, but it's not exactly what I'm looking for. I ordered both of the IMX Pro bladed jig rods. Hopefully I fall in love with one of those. Previously, before I went to Shimano, I used that 7'1" medium heavy LRS Douglas.
Yeah.
That was a good one. But just something that it has a little bit of tip, but that I can still rip it out of grass with. And it's a really, really hard in between to find that, you know, without getting so stiff of a rod that you're pulling it away from the fish, or so limber that you can't get it out of the grass. And it's probably a little bit different for every person. But for me, it's always been a medium heavy. I'm sure there's some brands that, you know, have a medium that's a little bit stouter, or a heavy that's a little more limber, but some use glass rods. I just feel you lose too much sensitivity with that. But you know, it's something that it can really come down to preference, because it's got a single hook. And if you can use a little bit stouter rod, if you're good at really letting them get that bait. So it's, you know, to each their own. But what Ethan said, that's about what I like to fish.
What about rod and reel speed or any specific brand or model that you like?
Reel, I love a 150 size Shimano. It doesn't matter if it's a SLX. I throw mine on a Metanium right now. It's just, it's so butter smooth that you can really stay in tune with the bait. But, you know, any, whatever your budget allows, but I really like that 150 size reel for a chatterbait. It's good for, you can still make those long casts, but it's also good for accurate casts, skipping under docks and stuff. But I like to fish the 7 gear. I've tried an 8 gear. I've tried a 6 gear. But with the 8 gear, you're just reeling it way too fast. If you want to reel it at a moderate pace, you're creeping your reel handle. Then I found with the 6 gear, especially in a kayak, you'll have a fish eat it coming towards you and you can't catch up to that fish. Mm-hmm. And I've lost a lot of fish that way. And that 7 gears really, I have, you know, probably 15 to 20 reels and I bet, you know, 85 to 90% of them are 7 gears. It's just, it's a really, it's an all around reel. You know, it's a little bit too fast for cranking, but you can do it if you need to, but you know, you can flip with it, throw a spinner bait, chatter bait. That's just, it's what I'm comfortable with most presentations.
Yeah, I think 7 is the new 6 now. Back a few years ago, 6 would be like, oh yeah, that's the bread and butter. But now, by 5 years, unless you're doing a deep diving crankbait, man, that's. And I have a 5 year for my crankbaits. One thing that I do learn is that, most baits, but there are some baits that really, it comes down to the rod, right? Like if you don't have the right rod, it's not, don't even bother.
Yeah.
I remember back when I started, didn't know a lot, budget was more limited than it is now. I would throw it on a crankbait just because I didn't have that money to buy 2 or 3 rods. So, man, and I mean, I was so frustrated with crankbait rods trying out for the use of a single hook like a chatterbait. And I realized I gotta save money. You really need it's for the most part, it's a beefy hook and you really need it. And I think the other thing about it is if that bass is not short striking, if that's swallowing it whole, that blade plays a part because that blade can, you know, force the mouth open before it can actually get hooked or get a good hook set on it. And I think that's a lot of times that's where the rod comes into, you know, kind of what you said, a little bit of a soft tip, but also, you know, heavy on the backbone. Kurt, you got any follow-ups on that?
It's such a balance, man. I feel like this goes for so many different baits out there when you're talking about the rod to use is that you're balancing the backbone and the tip to give you that exact right presentation. And the chatterbait's just another one of those ones. And maybe even more so than other baits with how specific the rod has to be. Listening to you guys talk kind of opens up my eyes to it because I've thrown, you know, and I haven't had a lot of success with them, obviously, because I'm trying to learn. But I threw them on glass rods that were medium heavy with a moderate tip. And, you know, that didn't really cut it for me. And the best one I had was a medium light with a fast tip. And you guys are nailing it on the head. And I feel like, you know, it's obvious that it's a very balanced rod, right, between the tip and the backbone. I mean, can you even really use that rod for anything else? I mean, I almost question whether you could use that rod for anything else, like a Texas rig or something. I feel like
I'll use my 7'5" Snyder Snipe as a trap rod every once in a while.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
And so, Russ actually uses it as a mag draft rod too.
Wow. Yeah. And I can see that for a mag.
The mag draft, yeah.
Because it has that hooks. Tip where it'll load up, and then you can set that and hook.
That rattle trap, I did not expect that answer, but I mean, if it's working, I wanted to ask you one more question before I let you guys plug into, you know, your social media and your sponsorship, and then I'll let you guys go, because I know, you know, I really value the time that you spent with us, and I've had you for over an hour, and then Kurt's almost falling asleep there on the back, like, see. But real quick question. I heard Ross Snyder talk about this before, back in Paddle and Frame, when they did an episode on bladed jigs. He mentioned that a sensitive rod has a big advantage, because there are times, and I don't know if I've experienced this. I think I have, but it says that when you are, you know, when you have a sensitive rod, you can feel that vibration. And he said every now and then you'll stop feeling that vibration, but there's no rocks, there's no grass. So you're wondering, well, why did it stop vibrating? He says, well, as soon as he stops feeling that vibration, he sets the hook. He says a lot of times bass will come up, swallow it, and swim towards you. So you don't feel the tension, but you are going to stop feeling the vibration because that bait is now in its mouth. Have you guys experienced it? And do you think a sensitive rod, you know, plays a big part in having success with a chatterbait or bladed jig?
For me, it's, I mean, I love a sensitive rod. I've gotten very picky about my stuff, but you don't necessarily need that sensitivity like you would with a slower bait where you're dragging it or something. Because with it, it has an open hook. You don't need to really crack back on them. In that situation where I'm reeling it along and the blade just stops turning, I'll usually just speed up, take a couple faster turns of the handle. And if that rod starts to load up, that's when I sweep back into them. Because you know, sometimes it could be where you might have a leaf or something got on your blade. And yeah, even if you speed it up, that blade starting again could get them to bite it. And if it's in their mouth, you're just going to, that softer tip's going to start to load up. And that's when you can hammer it home.
It's a good point. What about you, Ethan?
That's exactly the same as me. You're reeling it in, you stop, you feel that just get dull. You're like just pulling in weight. If it loads up, I will set the hammer on them. If not, I'll just kind of twitch the rod tip to free that grass or leaf. Definitely during the fall when there's leaves everywhere on top of the water, in the water, you'll get hung up a lot. But just a little quick little tap of your rod, your tip of your rod, you can clear it off. But a lot of times you'll see the line either twitch when there is a fish, or it'll start moving left or right.
Yeah.
And if it does that, hold on, set the hook.
Do you set the hooks? Like, I know, like, different baits, you know, turbo hooks on the bottom, like a crankbait, you set the hook, you know, kind of towards your side or at least on a downward motion. I'm assuming, you know, jackhammers has the, or bladed jigs, keep calling it jackhammers, has the, you know, the hook pointing up. So do you set the hook, like, up your shoulders, or you still set it sideways? Anything specific that you do as far as the hooks, like just because it's a bladed jig?
In a kayak, everybody knows hook sets are weird.
Yeah.
So many different angles. So I just set the hook as hard as I can, either direct. Like if it's behind me, I'll set it over. If it's in front of me, I'll do that. I just try to get, if you don't set the hook, you have zero chance catching that fish. So how I see it, just set the hook. Set the hook and pray.
What about you, Ewan? Do you have a specific hook set motion for a bladed jig?
Not really. I'm not sure if it matters as much as everyone says, like sweep it to the side. I'm not sure if it matters too much. I just try to not make it, you know, I don't want it to be snappy, if that makes any sense. Like how if you're flipping a jig or something, you really want it to crack when you set the hook, whereas a chatterbait, I just try to keep it smooth. I don't think you could probably, you know, if you were standing on a dock, you could set it going down. But it's just, I mean, it's an open hook. You don't need a ton of pressure to really get it going. As long as you have sharp hooks, I've had tons of fish where I'm fishing grass and I'm just sitting there snapping it, trying to get it out of the grass, and it starts swimming off to the side. I'm like, oh, there's a fish. And I've caught 8-pounders like that. I'd snap on them 3 or 4 times trying to get it out of the grass, and it was never grass in the first place. So I think it's just having a – keeping your hook sharp, whether you sharpen it or just get a fresh bait out when something happens, just keeping an eye on that hook point probably matters more than how you set the hook, as long as it's not snappy, because that blade could blow their mouth open.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, it's nice, Kurt, when you hear somebody talk 8-pounders in plural. Never.
Yeah.
I've got 8-pounders, not 8-pounder, 8-pounders in plural. That's awesome. Now, for real, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to come up to the podcast. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to what you guys do on the tournament this season. Ethan, for you, I know social media is part of the game, so looking forward to your social media content. Before you leave, I want to give each you a couple of minutes to plug in sponsorship, social media. So, Ethan, we'll start with you.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to thank y'all for letting me come on and blabber about some stuff. And I'd like to thank my biggest sponsor, Dugout Bait and Tackle, Seaguard Line, Torn Outdoors, Bad Boy Jigs, and Thunder Rocket Lures. I can't do anything without them, without their support. I do have I run a small YouTube channel called Jet's Fishing Adventures, and you can look me up on Facebook at Ethan Jet, Instagram, and TikTok at Ethan_Jet_Fishing. So.
Is there anybody that is in Tennessee that is not sponsored by Dugout Bait and Tackle? Like, seems like every time I talk to somebody from Tennessee, it's like, man, well, how does Steve Overman
hammers are?
Dugout has some of the biggest hammers. When he asked me to be on the team, I couldn't say no. Just to be considered to be on the team is amazing. So yeah. I have to thank Steve-O and Jamie Koza. So.
Dugout's not just Tennessee, it's the whole Southeast.
Yeah.
We've got them all. Florida, Georgia, Alabama.
Really, there's more than one Dugout Bait and Tackle, is it? Yeah. No, it's just that he runs the trails. He runs the trail in Georgia and Tennessee. That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I'm associating Steve Owens, the director, with Steve Owens.
Steve-O has his hands in almost everything. Kind.
Taking over. He's taking over.
Yeah.
Dude, got to watch out for this guy. Thank God he's a good guy, not an evil bad guy from a movie. He's taking over. You and to you, what you know? Where can people follow you? And you know, who sponsorships? Who's helped you out?
It's Ewing_Minor on Instagram, and then Ewing_Minor on Facebook. Got to thank Dugout, Hobie, Lawrence, Newport, Enduro Power, and Shimano and G Loomis, as well as Seaguar. That's one of the big ones. They keep me from breaking off fish all the time, that keep my line fresh.
Yeah, I'm not sponsored by Seaguar, but I think that's the best line, especially floral. That's the best ones out there.
Good line.
From Red Label to, well, I guess Basex, I've used that not a ton, but from their $10 spool of line to however much Tatsu is, it's all good stuff. It's, you know, what fits your budget. You can trust it. You know, it might have a little more memory on the cheaper ones, but it's still good, dependable line. So that's what I started with and what I'm still using to this day.
I like to throw this in, the Basex. I was blown away. I actually used it in the TOC the year before. I had no line. I needed some. I went to Walmart. I got the Basex, and I told myself, I'm probably going to have to change this out before the TOC, because it's $10 for 200 yards. And I caught so many fish on that line. I used it for the whole year, the next year. It was amazing.
The Basex, when it was Broken Bow, that event, I had a terrible spring. I blew up my car's motor. I barely had enough money to make it to Oklahoma. But I didn't have any 8-pound leader except for it was like a pre-production spool, didn't have a label or anything of Basex. It just said 8-pound fluoro, like on a little white label. And I used that for leader for that event. And you know,
you got second place on that one, I think, right?
Right there.
Yeah, I remember that one.
That was my biggest win. No, but it's I haven't used it much since then, but it's I mean, I never broke off a fish during that event. So for the price, you really can't beat it.
Do you so you won Broken Bow? I thought it was okay. There was the guy from was it Cali? It was an Asian dude that he came up like he camped out for like a whole week. What was his name?
It's Tuvu.
Tuvu. Yeah. Well, I thought Tuvu won and you came second, but no, you're right. You did want it.
It was it was very close. I think it was like a half an inch.
Yeah, something like that. I thought it was like half an inch or actually came out to the biggest bass, but something like that. But yeah. But you know, retrospective, you're talking about, you know, how that time, you know, you needed money to fix your car, and then we look at your back wall right now, and you probably own like a Mercedes or whatever your favorite car is right now.
I've got a 2008 GMC Yukon, and it's got 226,000 miles on it, but it's still going. I had to put all new brakes on it when I got back from Florida. I busted a brake line down there and barely made it back, but
damn,
you know, it's cost money to keep doing this. It's
yeah,
a lot of miles, a lot of wear and tear.
That's true. Well, gentlemen, again, congratulations and much success moving forward. Kurt, before we let this gentleman leave, any last thoughts?
Well, this has been instrumental for me, guys, because like I said, I'm going to be working on this year. I want to thank you both for coming on and spilling the – giving out some good juice on the stuff, man. I really appreciate you guys.
Well, yeah, this y'all. Is one – I don't listen to my episode, but this is one that I'll probably listen a couple of times going to on boat ramps, especially on tournament day. This is one that I would really listen to just because of the information. So,
well, I hate to tell you, it was all lies.
Hey, you know, broke my heart, man. You broke my heart.
Biggest lie.
It could be because it's kind of like the similar thing. And I'm thinking along the lines, I'm like, man, I'm doing the same thing these guys are, but I don't have any checks behind me. So I don't know what's going on. But anyways, thanks for everyone that watch. If you listen on our podcast streaming services, please leave us a 5-star review, especially I forgot to mention this on the intro, especially in Apple Podcasts. We're going to do a giveaway. So if you leave your name, you don't leave any personal information as far as address or anything like that or phone numbers, but in the review, leave your name and a short review. If you appreciate it, would be 5 stars. We'll read the reviews along the lines in the next few episodes. And then at the end of the quarter, we'll do a giveaway. It's going to be Catch Outdoors and a couple of other companies that have partnered with us. So leave a review. Make sure your name is in the review. And we announce it on the Advanced Kayak Angler with Kurt and Dan. So if you listen on our podcast streaming platform on Apple Podcasts, that's the one, Apple Podcasts, leave us a review there. I don't know that is there any other ones that you can leave a review. So Apple Podcasts. So we really appreciate it, guys. If you are, again, going to be on the water, please wear your PFDs. Have a great night, everyone. Peace out.
Peace.